Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya, Ashtottarashata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindaki, Iskon Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki, Karantarashimam Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gaura Premanandi, All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Shigoranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 23, entitled The Dynasty of the Sons of Jayati. And it's all the way to from 1 to verse number 19 and 20. Srila Prabhupada's overview. In this 23rd chapter, the dynasties of Anu, Druhyo, Durvashu, and Jadu, as well as the story of Jayamagha, are described. The son of Jayati's four sons, Anu, were Savanara, Chakshu, and Pareshnu. Of these three, the sons and grandsons of Savanara were in succession Kalanara, Srinjaya, Janamayaya, Mahashala, and Mahamana. The sons of Mahamana were Ushinara and Titikshu. Ushinara has four sons, namely Shivi, Vara, Kirni, and Daksha. Shivi also has four sons, Vrishadharva, Sudhira, Madra, and Kekaya. The son of Titikshu was Rushadratha, who begot a son named Homa. From Homa came Sutapa, from Sutapa, Bali. In this way, the dynasty continued, begotten by Dirgatama in the Dirgatama in the womb of the wife of Bali, were Anga, Banga, Kalinga, Suma, Pundra, and Odra, all of whom became kings. From Anga came Kalapana, whose dynasty including Divaratha, Dharmaratha, and Chitraratha, also called Romapada, one after another. Maharaj Dasarath gave in charity one of his daughters by the name Shanta to his friends Romapada. Because Romapada has no sons, Romapada accepted Shanta as his daughter, and the great sage Rishasringa married her. By the mercy of Rishasringa, Romapada has a son named Chaturanga. The son of Chaturanga was Prithulaksha, who had three sons, Brihadratha, Brihadkarma, and Brihadbhanu. From Brihadratha came a son named Brihamana, whose son and grandsons in successions were Jayadratha, Vijaya, Driti, Dhritaravata, Shatkarma, and Adiratha. Adiratha accepted the son rejected by Kunti, namely Karna, and Karna's son was Vrishasena. The sons of Jayati's third son, Drihyu, was Babhru, whose son and grandsons were Setu, Arabha, Arabdha, Gandhara, Dharma, Drita, Durmada, and Pracheta. The sons of Jayati's second son, Turvashu, was Bhani, whose seminal dynasty included Bharga, Banuman, Tribhanu, Karandhama, and Maruta. The childish Maruta accepted Dushmanta, who belonged to the Puru dynasty, and his adopted son. Maharaj Dushmanta was anxious to have his kingdom returned, and so he went back to the Puru Vansa. Of the four sons of Yadu, Sahasrajit was the eldest. The son of Sahasrajit was named Satajit, who had three sons, of whom one was Haihaya. The sons and grandsons of the dynasty of Haihaya were Dharma, Netra, Kunti, Sohanji, Mahisman, Badrashenaka, Danaka, Kritavirya, Arjuna, Jayadwaja, Talajanga, and Vitihotra. The son of Vitihotra was Madhu, whose eldest son was Vrishni. Because of Yadu, Madhu, and Vrishni, their dynasties are known as Yadava, Madhava, and Vrishni. Another son of Yadu was Krushta, and from him came Vrijanavam, Savahita, Vishatgu, Chitraratha, Sasabindu, Pritushava, Dharma, Ushana, and Ruchaka. Ruchaka has five sons, one of whom was known as Jayamagha. Jayamagha was sonless, but by the mercy of the demigods, his childless wife gave birth to a son named Vidarbha. I read the translation because a lot of verses. So text number one. Sukadev Goswami said, Anu, the fourth son of Yayati, had three sons named Savanara, Chakshu, and Pareshnu. O king, from Savanara came a son named Kalanara, and from Kalanara came a son named Srinjaya. Text number two. From Srinjaya came a son named Janamayaya. From Janamayaya came Mahashala. From Mahashala, Mahamana. And from Mahamana, two sons named Ushinara and Titikshu. Text number three and four. The four sons of Ushinara were Sivi, Vara, Krimi, and Daksha. And from Sivi again came four sons named Brishadharva, Sudhira, Madra, and Atmatattvabit, Kekaya. The sons of Titikshu was Rushadrata. From Rushadrata came Homa. From Homa, Sutapa. From Sutapa, Bali. By the semen of Dirgatama, the wife of Bali, the emperor of the world, six sons took birth, namely Anga, Banga, Kalinga, Suma, Pundra, and Odra. So Dirgatama was the one who kicked out in the womb of when the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, he forced himself in the womb of the wife of his brother. Remember that part? Dirgatama was the one who was in the womb of the wife, and then he kicked out the son that came from Brihaspati. Sorry, I'm a little slow. I was not supposed to give this class today, so I'm not properly prepared. So that was this sage. Okay, so we continue. These six sons, headed by Anga, later became kings of six states in the eastern side of India. These states were known according to their names and their respective kings. From Anga came a son named Kalapana, and from Kalapana came Dhirvarata. From text number 7 to 10, from Dhirvarata came a son named Dharmarata, and his son was Chitrarata, who was celebrated as Ramapada. Ramapada, however, was without issue, and therefore his friend Maharaj Dasaratha gave him his own daughter named Shanta. Ramapada accepted her as his daughter, and thereafter she married Rishasringa. When the demigods from the heavenly planets failed to shower rain, Rishasringa was appointed the priest for performing a sacrifice after being brought from the forest by the allurement of prostitutes. Remember that was narrated also. Oh no, I think that was during the Ayodhya Yatra. His Holiness Ramapada Swami narrated the story of Rishasringa, and he was a very saintly, innocent ascetic that was being protected by his father. I can't remember the details, but you remember, Krishnarjuna? He never seen a woman. So he was protected in that way. And then it was explained to the king that in order to bring rain, they needed someone who was perfectly pure. And so he pointed out that this boy, sage, was perfectly pure, but you know, he had to be brought from the forest. So the way that devised that is that they send some prostitutes, well, you know, some courtesans, and then this innocent sage, because he have never seen a female form, then he sort of befriend them. They arrange some trap, and anyway, when he was induced to come to follow them into the city, and then that's when this whole thing happened. So there's a whole story on that Rishasringa. He was brought from the forest by the allurement of prostitute who danced a stage theatrical performances accompanied by music, and embrace and worship him. After Rishasringa came, the rain fell. Thereafter, Rishasringa performed a sun-given sacrifice on behalf of Maharaj Dasarath, who have no issue. And then Maharaj Dasarath have sons, so that's how he was the one who performed that sacrifice, who gave the three wives of Maharaj Dasharath the sweet rice that then were able to impregnate them with Lord Ramachandra and his brothers. From Ramapada, by the mercy of Rishasringa, Chaturanga was born, and from Chaturanga, Prithulaksha. The son of Prithulaksha was Brihadrata, Brihadkarma, and Brihadbanu. From the eldest, Brihadrata, came a son named Brihamana, and from Brihadmana came a son named Jayadrata. I wonder if this is Jayadrata, the rascal who Arjuna killed in the battlefield Kurukshetra. The son of Jayadrata, by the womb of his wife Sambhuti, was Vijaya, and from Vijaya Driti was born. From Driti came Dhritabrata, from Dhritabrata Satkarma, and from Satkarma Adhirata. While playing, text number 13, while playing on the banks of the Ganges, Adirata found a baby wrapped up in a basket. The baby has been left by Kunti because he was born before she was married. Because Adirata has no sons, he raised this baby as his own. This son was later known as Karna. So here in the narration of the Bhagavatam, Adirata seems to be in the line of Kshatriyas. And just remembering that, what I remember reading in the Mahabharata was that he was also, at least in the Mahabharata, at least in the narration that I read, he was a chariot driver. So it's a little different thing appears, at least. But nevertheless, Adirata was the one who took Karna and raised it. But Karna always was one of the things that although he has all these symptoms of being a powerful warrior, Kshatriya, and the fact that he has an armor as part of his body. So, and he was so qualified and powerful. He was always derided as the son of a chariot driver. What was the name for a chariot driver? What's the Sanskrit name for a chariot driver? Sarathi. Yeah, Sarathi. So he was called the son of a chariot driver, basically like that. So he was always very offended by this. O king, text number 14. O king, the only son of Karna was Vrishasena. Vrishasena was killed by Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra in front of Karna, which was very upsetting for him. But Arjuna, in one sense, was retaliating back because Karna was present during the killing of Abhimanyu. So that happened in the battlefield. The only son of Karna was Vrishasena. Druhyu, the third son of Jayati, had a son named Babru, and the son of Babru was known as Setu. This text number 15. The son of Setu was Arabdha. Arabdha's son was Gandhara, and Gandhara's son was Dharma. Dharma's son was Dhrita. Dhrita's son was Durmada. And Durmada's son was Procheta, who had 100 sons. Text 16. The Prachetas, the son of Pracheta, occupied the northern side of India, which was devoid of Vedic civilization, and became kings there. Jayati's second son was Turvashu. The son of Turvashu was Bani, and the son of Bani, Bharga. The son of Bharga, Banuman. This text number 17. The son of Banuman was Tribhanu, and his son was the magnanimous Karandhama. Karandhama's son was Maruta, who had no sons and who therefore adopted a son of Puru dynasty, Maharaj Dushmanta, as his own. Maharaj Dushmanta was the father of Bharat Maharaj, right? We hear about. Text 18 and 19. Maharaj Dushmanta, desiring to occupy the throne, returned to his original dynasty, the Puru dynasty, even though he had accepted Maruta as his father. O Maharaj Parikshit, let me now describe the dynasty of Jadu, the eldest son of Maharaj Jayati. This description is supremely pious, and it vanquishes the reactions of sinful activities in human society. Simply by hearing this description, one is free from all sinful reactions. So now, We are approaching in the Srimad Bhagavatam the smiling face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the most confidential knowledge of all knowledge. So it's approaching. So we almost finished the canto 9 and about to start the 10th canto, which is the passage of Lord Krishna. The previous sons of Jayati, as you remember, Jayati have 5 sons. So the eldest was Yadu, and then 3 sons that were the sons of Sarmishta, right? And the 2 sons of Puru was a son of Sarmishta. So Sarmishta has 3 sons, and Devayani has 2 sons. So the eldest was Yadu, the youngest was Puru. However, the 3 in the middle, they were considered that they were not very acquainted with, they were not fully acquainted with the principles of Dharma. They were a little, deviating on that, not fully established like the 2 other sons, Jayati and Puru. So their descriptions of their sons were, there, but now, after describing the dynasty of Puru that was tremendously glorious and is basically dominating the whole Mahabharata story, now comes the descriptions of the descendants of Yadu. And the glories of the descendants of Yadu is that in that dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, appears. So that's how we're starting right now. So Shukadev Goswami says that now, he's going to start this description, and this description is supremely pious. Text 20 and 21. So we read number 20 together. Yatra vartirna bhagavam paramatma narakriti yadu sahasrajit krushta nalori pur iti shuta yatravartirna bhagavam paramatma narakriti yado sahasajit krushta nalori pur iti shutah yatravartirna bhagavam paramatma narakriti yado sahasrajit krushta nalori pur iti shuta. Please chant. Jatra, wherein in which dynasty? Avartinaha, descended. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Paramatma, who is the Super Soul of all living entities. Naraakriti, a person exactly resembling a human being. Jadoho, of Jadu. Sahasrajit. Krushta. Nalaha, Nala. Ripu. Iti Shuta. Thus they are celebrated. Chatwaraha, four. Sunabaha, sons. Tatra, therein. Satajit. Prathama Atmajaha, of the first sons. Mahahaja. Renuhaya. Haihaja. Cha, an, iti, thus. Tatsutaha, his sons, the sons of Satajit. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the Super Soul in the heart of all living entities, descended in His original form as a human being in the dynasty or family of Jadu. Jadu has four sons named Sahasrajit, Krushta, Nala and Ripu. Of these four, the eldest, Sahasrajit, has a son named Satajit, who had three sons named Mahahaja, Renuhaja, and Haihaja. Purport. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, Vadanti Tattvata Vidas Tattvam Jagyanan Advajam Brahmeti Paramadmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdyate, quote, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, end of quote. The majority of transcendentalists understand only the impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, for the personality of Godhead is very difficult to understand, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7.3. Manushyanam sahasresu kaschit jatate sridayet jatatan apisidhanam kaschin man veti tattvataha. Quote, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. End of quote. The yogis and jnanis, that is, the mystic yogis and the impersonalists, can understand the absolute truth as impersonal or localized. But although such realized souls are both ordinary beings, ordinary human beings, they cannot understand how the Supreme Absolute Truth can be a person. Therefore, it is said that out of many siddhas, the souls who have already realized the Absolute Truth, one may understand Krishna, who exactly resembles a human being, Narakriti. This human form was explained by Krishna himself after he manifested the Virat Rupa. The Virat Rupa is not the original form of the Lord. The Lord's original form is Dvi Bhuja Shyama Sundar Murli Dhara. The Lord with two hands playing a flute. Jan Shyama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam. The Lord's form are proof of his inconceivable qualities. Although The Lord maintains innumerable universe within the period of his breath. He dresses with a form exactly like that of a human being. That does not mean, however, that he is a human being. This is his original form, but because he looks like a human being, those with poor form of knowledge consider him an ordinary man. The Lord says, Abhajananti man mudha manusin tanun ashitam param bhava ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Quote, fools deride me when I descend in my human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Bhagavad Gita 9:11. By the Lord's param bhavam, or transcendental nature, he is all-pervading. Paramatma, living in the core of the hearts of all living being entities. Yet he looks like a human being. Mayavada philosophy says that the Lord is originally impersonal, but assumes a human form and many other forms when he descends. Actually, however, he is originally like a human being, and the impersonal Brahman consists of the rays of his body. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagananda koti umayana timirandasya jananjana shalakaya chaksur ummilitam jena tasmai sri guruve namaha namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasaya bhutale shimate romapada swami iti namine namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasaya bhutale shimate bhaktivedanta swami iti namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine Bancha Kalpataru Vyasha Kripasindu Vyaeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. The understanding that the absolute truth is a person, Prabhupada explains here, is a very difficult concept. It's a very difficult concept to explain and to understand because it's beyond anything or experience that we may have in this material world. It is so difficult that what to speak of people in this material world, common people, but actually it is like Prabhupada quotes Krishna saying that even siddhas or perfected beings who have realized their spiritual position, they cannot understand it still. It's not easy. Great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, at times they became bewildered by the displays of Krishna's pastimes. So to understand the personality of Godhead manifesting human-like qualities and activities is beyond people's comprehension. It is much more easier to understand that is beyond everything, that maintains the creation, that is the substance of everything that exists, to be an energy. Why is it so easy to accept that concept? Is in one sense, Prabhupada explains, is that we're trying to explain that which is beyond our comprehension by means of the experience that we have. So the Mayavadi philosophy, which explains the absolute truth, there are basically three aspects of the absolute truth: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, and Bhagavan. So transcendentalists are the ones who realize one of these aspects. So for the impersonalists, it's easy to accept, because their experience is that the material experience is full of misery. So forms are part of this material existence. Personality are part of this material existence. Relationships are part of this material existence. Variegatedness is part of this material existence. And all these things, it is explained that is part of this temporary feature of matter that is called Maya. And the result of being in this Maya is suffering. So that which is beyond Maya have to be the opposite of Maya. It's a logic thing. It's not illogic. So if we have to leave this place, and this place have these characteristics, and we go to a place that is opposed, that is spiritual, it's not material, then the spiritual must be, it must not be this, it must not be that, it must not be, you know, they must, they cannot be formed, they cannot be variegatedness, it have to be the opposite. So that is the logic. So therefore, Prabhupada explains that the Mayavadi is, the approach is all neti, neti, neti. Not this, not this, not this. But don't have necessarily a positive explanation of the spiritual reality. But it's simple to understand. Our experience is that relationships, forms, personalities, etc., etc., variegatedness is a sort of mystery. So the absolute truth must be impersonal, must be an energy. Those who are personalists, and not necessarily siddhas or transcendentalists, but who accept, you know, common people who accept God, also the concept of, in one sense, they accept that God is a person, but the concept is also trying to be fit in the experience that we have. So if God is the original person, the father of all mankind, who is way back in the creation, he must be very old. So God is supposed to be this very old bearded person, and very powerful, and with so much awe and reverence that we actually fear him. Is to be feared because if you do something that he is not pleased with, that is against his direction, he will punish you very severely. And the connection is so distant that in many religions, the approach is we can say his name, we can conceive his form or his features. So sometimes this God is depicted as remember receiving pamphlets, Christian pamphlets, that depicted God, but the face was wiped out. There's no face. It was just a, you know, circle. But, you know, it was like a judge, big, stout, sitting in a... No, it was not even a comfortable throne. It was like a stone throne with, you know, in front of a table and with a one of those, you know, a judge hammer thing. Ready to... Very fearsome, big effulgence. Or, in other tradition, it says you can actually, like in the Islam tradition, you cannot write, you know, try to paint God. If you do that, you're finished. They will kill you. And or even describe something about God, don't go there. It's not allowed. So it's a very distant, impersonal too. So to understand God as a person is very bewildering. It becomes, you know, almost like, wow, this sounds really cultish, you know, it doesn't make sense. The way human society try to understand God as a person, it makes more sense to have him as a known person, as an energy, or to make, you know, the absolute truth to be like that. And if it's so difficult to understand him as this very old, stout, angry personality, the concept of understanding God as a cowherd boy, blue, that love play flute and having loving exchanges with friends in playing, you know, in the fields and dancing, it's like, forget about it. What are you talking about? It's so difficult to understand. Why blue? Blue. Have you ever seen someone that is blue? Smurfs, you know, like that. You know, yeah. So, why blue? And why flute? And why a cow? I mean, you may think, you know, that God, you know, must have the most powerful animal, maybe an elephant or a tiger or a lion. A cow, so unassuming creature. It's a very nice creature, but who pays attention to a cow? You know, a farmer like that and have it, you know, eating grass. It's so much of an unassuming creature. And to understand Krishna in his form, in that form, you know, as a cowherd boy, is very, very rare and difficult. For personalists, even for personalists, for those who accept Bhagavan, is not so easy either. For those who accept Bhagavan feature, the form of Lord Vishnu is more, makes sense, because it's so powerful, and there's a certain distance that creates this awe and reverence towards the personality of Lord Vishnu as the creator, as the maintainer, and he doesn't have much of the drama of human-like things. The activities of Lord Vishnu are not human-like. There's some, there's and even his form, he has form arms like that. But and you know, the activities in Vaikuntha and activities of the Lord descending, you know, in his Garuda with weapons, you know, and annihilating demons and establishing always order in the universe, maintaining order in the universe, is easier to take. Okay, yes, no one can match Lord Vishnu. And sometimes he appears in different forms, like, it's, you know, is recognizable. They're amazing, like Lord Nrisingadev, you know, or like Lord Varaha. This magnificent, gigantic manifestation that is just, it takes, you know, puts you in this mood of awe and reverence. But then when he goes to, say, Lord Ramachandra, who manifests a human-like pastime, I was bewildering to some. But even then, Lord Ramachandra still manifests, you know, this great power and opulence as a Kshatriya. But when it comes to Krishna, that's another thing. Brajendra Nandana Krishna, that's another thing. And Sukadev Goswami is going to enter in the ecstasy of describing the pastimes of Lord Krishna, which is the most intimate, confidential understanding of the absolute truth. Because now Sukadev Goswami is going to start to describe Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, the source of everything. And so one is prepared to hear, you know, about the source of Lord Vishnu, the source of all incarnations, the Ete Chamsa Kalapunsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And so preparing to enter to understand this personality, then it comes, you know, that the activities that he manifests, and Krishna, one of the bewildering things is that even with those simple, unassuming form of a baby, of a cowherd boy, he displayed his magnificent potencies. He didn't hide them. It's not with Lord Ramachandra, there was certain, you know, his pastimes were, a little sort of within a whole Leela that was being displayed of being a perfect king. But with Krishna, is that he plays and then manifests his opulences. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan is like nothing has happened. You know, he leaves this mountain, Govardhan, and basically is telling Indra, so you're showing your power, but your power doesn't even compare to my pinky in my left hand. Not even in my right hand. So this right here is, you know, you don't even match this, your power. So Lord Brahma, so these are all, he's manifesting, you know, he's seeing this boy eating with his friends, you know, yogurt and sweets and different things, playing and being so unassuming. And then how how you can understand it. Very difficult. Very difficult. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, he reveals how to properly understand it. He gave the knowledge to Arjuna that he comes in his original form, Sriyamyaham. He comes in his original form in every millennium. Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. And when we come to understand the nature of his appearance and his activities, then we can actually fully qualify to go back home to Godhead. And he explains that to receive this knowledge, you have to have this quality that he says that one have to be anusuyave, non-envious. Non-envious of his position. If there is no trace of enviousness, then we qualify to receive the knowledge, this most confidential knowledge that basically give us entrance to Krishna in his most intimate display of pastimes and activities. And to be able to connect to that most confidential knowledge, we have to be guided by Bhakta, someone who who have seen or understood that tattva or that truth. So Lord Brahma was able to see it, and then we received from Lord Brahma through the disciple succession this most confidential knowledge, and then it's presented in the scriptures, also guided by this disciplic succession, to give us entrance to something that is very difficult to understand. But once you have entrance to it, you actually having the advantage of something that is so rare that even siddhas, even perfected beings, sometimes miss it, which is, you know, something quite wonderful. Anyway, it's 8:27. We have a few more minutes. If you have anything to add or question, that will be very nice. Thank you.
Guess not. Nobody else.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your class. The one thing that came to my mind was this verse mentions both Bhagavan and Paramatma. One thing that came to mind is that something my brother said a while ago. He says when someone has opulences like Bhagavan, then naturally you want to surrender to that person. Like the demons, when they saw Mohini Murti form, they wanted to surrender at their lotus feet. So the tendency is that when we see someone in an authority position with some opulences, the tendency is that you show them, you know, awe, reverence, love, respect. It may not be genuine because you might want to get something out of them. But one thing we have to keep in mind is that, you know, Bhagavan, he's not an ordinary person, you know. You know, he knows what's in our heart. He knows our motives. So it's not like we could just, you know, respect him on the outside and not respect him on the inside. So this goes to the point of one thing that I mentioned last week. One devotee had a question. He said, how should I associate with my Dikshan Shiksha Guru? The Dikshan Guru is always traveling. And so how, if I want to get initiated, how am I supposed to associate with these always? Should I just focus on my relationship with the Shiksha Guru? So my understanding is it brings to mind the Ranti Dev pastime. The reason I appreciate that pastime is because When we're in school, everyone respects each other, but when the teacher leaves, then everyone disrespects each other. So this past time, I appreciated because it was Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva wanted to disguise themselves to see if Ramchandra was truly tender, or was he truly a pretender? Was he truly devoted to Rama, or was he truly devoted to drama? See, we can't get away with anything because, like in this verse, it says that the Lord is, he's not an ordinary human being. He's super soul. That means he has 24-hour surveillance. Krishna Yadi Kripa Kade Konya Bhagyavani Guru Antaryami Rupe Shikoy Apani. The Lord is Guru Antaryami. He is disguised within the heart of every living being. So it's not that we should just focus on our relationship with our Ditcha Guru, our Shitcha Guru, but how do we treat others when they're gone? You know, it's easy to put on a show or play. That's easy. But how do we treat each other? And so, what are some, if I have to ask a question, what are some points a person is supposed to look out for if they don't keep this very important understanding in mind? Like, what are the results of committing these offenses? You know, because that's very disrespectful to the guru also. You know, okay, guru, you know, it's very duplicitous. You know, when you're here, you know, I could put on a show, but when you're gone, you know, I could treat anyone like crap. And so what are the results or the offenses or the consequences for, you know, being an actor? If we want to be an actor, we might as well go to Hollywood and get paid for our Academy Award winning acting. But what are the consequences that one should look out for? Because they may be subtle. My understanding is Shushu Shosha Danasa Vasudeva Kataruchi Siyama Haseva Avipa Punya Tirtha Nishavana. To the degree we're not pretending, then we have Vasudeva Kataruchi. And then a vice versa if we're committing these offenses. That's my understanding. Well, maybe you could elaborate on it a little bit. Thank you, Harisha.
I would say that it's not unnatural in one sense, you know, that those who are advanced, the spiritual masters and the great souls, they give their association to help us purification, and by their association, those times that we experience, you know, that the devotees, you know, sincerely, they want to do their best, you know, to in front of the spiritual master. Even if you may be struggling throughout, you know, all the times that your spiritual master is not present, you know, when your spiritual master is here, or when a great devotee, you have that association, then one elevates one's activities, and then you experience that. That's the purpose. When they associate with one, they elevate our activities, and we experience those moments of elevation, and that's really what, you know, propels our continuing pursuing Krishna consciousness. Because without that, without the association of these great souls, there's no chance. In general, most of us are so conditioned to material existence that there will be no chance to actually elevate your consciousness to a steady platform of Krishna consciousness like that. So the times that we experience, you know, that sort of safe space is when we engage in the service of Guru and Krishna. And when they're present, when our Guru is present, when this great soul are present, then, you know, we want to be in our A game. And it's something that is very important in the beginning of a Krishna consciousness when we are in this mixed devotion, Kanishtha Adhikari. And it's expected. The symptoms of the Kanishtha Adhikaris are described. And many of us are Kanishtha Adhikaris, you know, trying to elevate ourselves in, you know, to the next level. And so if I have an understanding of myself, that then I can have empathy, and I can actually not only have empathy, but being able to understand that I'm among other people who are actually trying very hard to elevate themselves. And I can appreciate that, and I can appreciate that association, because these are people that are sticking, although struggling, to the process of purification. Therefore, Prabhupada say, why criticizing them when they're in the shower? You know, they may be dirty, but they're in the process of cleansing. So, we see ourselves. If I find myself becoming offended, or if I find myself becoming upset, or having some sort of a conflict, internal conflict, about how I perceive someone is seeing me, or how I perceive in someone else, then it means that, you know, I have to say, okay, let me take some soap and then try to wash that spot that is, you know, that I have. So it's again, it always points out towards myself. If I'm feeling so strong and upset or disturbed about how things are within the community of Vaishnavas who are in the process of cleansing and purifying themselves, it means that I'm getting distracted from the actual purification of myself. If I'm, you know, plain more or less makes sense on that. You know, so it's not unnatural. It's natural that that happens. It's not a drama. I don't think so. It's not necessarily an acting. It's just as it's planned, as it's supposed to be in general. It's natural. It's a process of becoming mature and more established. So we have to see that in ourselves. We have to see that actually I don't have much to point out, because I have a lot of things that I have to work on myself. You know, I have to, you know, if I want to see honesty, if I want to see genuine, you know, characters, I have to reach that myself. So he always come back to us. He always come back to us. Yitendra Prabhu.
I asked Ramapad Swami, I told him, I said, a lot of these people, the only time they come here is when you hear Maharaj. And then he goes, is that good or bad? And I said, well, it's at least they're showing up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Papa was very kind, you know, also. He always appreciated. He always appreciated.
Well, then he would, if somebody would leave, he would said, let's, you try to bring him back. And then there was one temple president in Detroit, and the devotees, he did something, I don't know, but the devotees really came down on him. And Prabhupada said, you made it so bad, for him, he'll never want to come back.
He'll never want to come back, yeah, right. Yeah, so, you know, we have to show respect and empathy too. And appreciate more. So that's one of the things that Jai Baladev Prabhu, you know, you in general, you know, bring out sometimes very passionately about more appreciation, less negativity. And we start with us. So, you know, I mean, sometimes you tried, you know, I was going to mention to you sometimes a little, you know, and I mean, I think you do it on purpose, you know, making a point a little over the board. but, you know, we take that, But at the same time, when we take the positive thing of appreciating, you know, that's it's not selective appreciation. It's appreciation, you know, throughout, even to those who are may having, you know, who are may not being necessarily, you know, doing something that we feel, you know, is right. So, you know, something like that. Anyway, I stop.
Devotees were, you know, saying what a nice devotee is and stuff and telling him all these things. And then he said to the devotee, he said, enough of your cheap compliments.
Yeah.
Prabhupada, you're so great. You're going to go do something productive, right?
Oh, that's something, Del. That's something different.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you so much. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai.